This week on Texas Scorecard Radio, we'll touch base on a couple of big stories we missed during the Christmas break, and we'll hear what the governor is saying as the city of Austin devolves into chaos. For our interview, we're joined by Joe Nixon, lead counsel on the Baby Tinsley Lewis case, to discuss their efforts to protect life in the courts. And we'll close with a commentary from Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan. Welcome back, friends, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios in Austin, Texas. You can, as always, find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. Get started with this week's news. I've got Brandon Walton's managing editor for Texas Scorecard. Brandon, I wanted to talk about a couple of stories. We're coming back from the new year. We did a couple of we did a recap episode for Christmas. We looked back at things from the previous year for New Year's Day or the day after New Year's. Mm-hmm. But there were a couple stories that we didn't cover that kind of happened around Christmas time, and I wanted to touch on these. First one, and this was intentionally buried on the eve of Christmas, the House committee that was investigating Texas House Speaker Dennis Bonin finally ended its investigation.
Well, that's exactly right. And the timing on this was very, very, very deliberate. Okay. Now, some listeners who've been following along may know the Speaker of the Texas House got in some trouble for a quid pro quo backroom offer that ended up being on tape. You had the Texas House Committee on
the General Investigating Committee.
Yes,
that's right.
Say, okay, we're going to do an investigation on this. They institute this a few months ago. After the fallout, and you had the Speaker of the House, Dennis Bonin, actually announcing he's not going to run for re-election, you had the members sort of turning against him. Well, after all this fallout, they schedule a meeting, a very interestingly timed meeting, for the Friday before Christmas. I mean, I went to this meeting in the Capitol. It was absolutely empty.
I was watching the video online, and there, you know, there's Brandon, you know, sitting in the front of the room, empty room.
Right? Yeah.
Nobody's paying attention to this thing. And you're going, are they going to do something big? I'm guessing they're not going to do something big.
Yeah, well, your guess would have been correct. Instead, the committee adopted unanimously a report which said, among other things, but I think the most interesting thing said, well, Bonin may have violated state law, but we recommend that really nothing be done.
Yeah, that was kind of the one resolution that was actually taken, was saying, hey, we definitely don't want this guy prosecuted. We don't want these laws enforced against him. He may have broken them, but we don't want anything to happen. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, you know, even if they were in a position to recommend, you know, a censure, an impeachment, you know, some kind of punishment internal to the House, they said, oh, well, that's just kind of up to everybody else.
Right. And it's not even clear, by the way, how that would even be enforced. I mean, you did see some statements from Morgan Meyer, who's the chair of that committee, Republican from Dallas, saying, well, now it's, you know, up to the House. We did our work as a committee. Well, what is the committee there for? That's how the House
They're supposed
operates.
To kick it off and recommend something. That was it. All right. Second story, completely different, but something that was huge during the break. We obviously had this church shooting in White Settlement. A lot of fallout from that and a lot of implications for the legislature because of you know, reforms that happened. This didn't turn out to be the catastrophe that it could have been, although it certainly was one.
Yeah, and a lot of folks have seen this, right? You had the heroic actions of Jack Wilson, a guy who's actually running for county commissioner, but a guy there who was the head of the church's volunteer security team, stopping this shooting really, really early on, preventing, you know, how many lives, you know, countless lives, you know, may have been lost if he wasn't there and wasn't able to be armed and do that. The takeaway from this, though, as it relates to the legislature, is that this is something that was illegal in Texas even just a couple years ago.
Yeah, you had a problem where folks were wanting to organize like this, and you know, security,
yeah.
Security people, security firms, private security officers had these licensing schemes that said, "Oh, well, you have to come get all your permits and paperwork and everything if you want to provide security." And churches, you know, these are people who want to be law abiding, right? So they say, "Okay, right. We want to follow this." Matt Rinaldi, state rep in the legislature at the time, carries a bill that says, hey, now let's let people, you know, take care of themselves.
Exactly. A bill, by the way, that at the time, this was 2017, where you had former Speaker of the House Joe Strauss and his leadership team blocking it. Rinaldi was able to successfully amend this on to another bill that came over from the Senate. And it actually at the time passed unanimously. Now, of course, you see Democrats, even in the wake of the shooting, still saying, you know, we need to take away guns from people. A very, very interesting argument for them to make at this time.
Yeah. You know, we want to take away guns from the good guys. It's always the thing there. I think the interesting takeaway, I look at it, is you have this guy, and he's being praised as a hero, and he is a hero, but the truly heroic thing is he organized his church. He was a leader there, and that's something, and even if you're not a great shot, you can do that, and everybody out there can now do that, organize their friends, neighbors to, you know, secure their own turf.
Absolutely.
All right, next let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau for Texas Scorecard. Jacob, you've actually been in downtown Austin dealing with, I guess you're down there taking some photos, and I asked you to call in to talk about these stories. What's going on with the homeless situation? You're kind of experiencing it directly as we speak.
Yeah, Tony, it almost feels like Gotham down here in some ways. There's been a lot of news lately with the homeless situation in Austin. Over the weekend, there was actually a tragic murder of a restaurant employee, and it was a homeless man who stabbed him. And over the weekend, Governor Greg Abbott took to Twitter and actually condemned Austin city officials for their decisions that have endangered the public safety.
Yeah, so you've had the city of Austin engaging in radical policies, I mean, literally drawn from L.A., Seattle, San Francisco, places that have failed, but they're adopting these policies nonetheless to let homeless vagrants run wild through downtown. I mean, that's continuing to happen. Is the governor actually saying that he's going, what is the governor saying he's going to do? I mean, is there any action backing up the words?
Tony, that kind of remains to be seen, but this whole story began back in June, like you said, when the Austin City Council legalized homeless camping pretty much almost anywhere, almost any public space in the city, and that immediately sparked a wildfire of public contention. I mean, you had months of citizens packing town halls. You had a petition that got over 55,000 citizen signatures calling for this law to be reversed because it was endangering the public safety.
Yeah. In the meantime, as all of this stuff is falling apart, what's the mayor been doing?
Well, over the Christmas holiday, Mayor Steve Adler took to Twitter and posted a picture of himself enjoying a relaxing infinity pool overlooking some bayside mountains overseas. And so while all this stuff is going on here on the streets of Austin, he seems to be having a pretty good time.
Yeah. So I think he's now back and he's kind of rattling against the governor saying, oh, well, you're just a bad guy for being mean to the homeless. Is there any end in sight on this?
That remains to be seen, Tony. We'll see what happens, but citizens are facing some really serious risks here, not only with the public safety, with the homelessness issue, but just also affordability. You know, the city council just keeps raising taxes and keeps taking money from working families here. So there's a lot of challenges that Austinites are facing, and that the city council is actually making worse.
Yeah, and it's creating a feedback loop. It's creating even more homelessness and more affordability problems. Thank you for your reporting on it, Jay. We'll keep an eye on it. Thank you.
Thanks.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome on the program this week Joe Nixon, an attorney working with Texas Right to Life and lead counsel on the baby Tinsley Lewis case that has been in the news. Thank you for joining us, Joe.
Thanks, Tony, for having me.
Well, Joe, tell us a little bit about this. I mean, we've been covering the story to some degree on the program, but tell us, you know, start it from the beginning, how you got involved for folks who maybe haven't been paying attention or maybe only caught in a glimpse of what's been going on. Tell us about how you got involved. What's happening?
Well, this is a case in which I've handled several of these cases involving the 10-day rule. And we're going to talk about that and how important it is. But, you know, there's basically a law in Texas. We call it the 10-day rule. I think it better may be known as a 48-hour rule. If a doctor chooses not to continue care on a patient for whatever reason, patient does not have to be in their last illness, does not have to be terminal, doesn't even have to be chronically ill. If the doctor chooses not to continue care, he can go to the hospital and say, I don't want to continue care anymore. The hospital will then convene an ethics committee. They will notify the patient or the patient's decision maker 48 hours before the hospital's ethics committee meets. The ethics committee will then consider, by looking at the medical records in the doctor's position, whether or not the doctor may ethically terminate care.
Which means let this patient, you know, patients, what we're talking about is patients who, you know, need help breathing, for instance, and terminate the machine, turn the machines off that help these patients breathe.
It means death in most cases.
So tell us about how this law is involved in and who Tinsley Lewis is.
Well, Tinsley is a little baby girl, now 11 months old. So when I got in the case, she was only 9 months old. And what happened is I was at home watching football on Saturday afternoon, November 9th. And I got a call from Texas Right to Life and said, are you willing and able to help a little baby in the hospital? And I said, yes.
It's so more important than the football game.
Yes. So I said, yes, I'd help. And then I made a few phone calls, got the hospital's lawyer on the phone, and I found out that the hospital was scheduled to terminate care on Sunday, November 10th, the next day. And I asked them if they would please delay that decision for a couple of days in order to see if we couldn't find another place to take Tinsley. And they told me, well, we'll let you know tomorrow. So on Sunday morning, after I was leaving church by 11:30, I get a call from the hospital saying, no, we're not going to give you more time. We're going to terminate care today.
So what did you do at that point?
Well, at that point, I swallowed hard, and I said, you know, there's only one thing to do, and that's to get a temporary restraining order. So I got permission from my client to move forward in that direction. But, you know, look, I live in Houston. My office is in Houston. The baby was in a hospital in Fort Worth, 4-hour drive away. In order to get a restraining order, you have to get a verified petition in front of a judge. And I didn't know how I was going to put all the paperwork together, drive to Fort Worth, find a judge, serve the hospital, and beat the hospital to the time in which they terminated care.
And this is a Sunday, and of course it was Veterans Day weekend, right? So it's a holiday weekend, a Sunday. There are no the courts are not open.
Courts aren't open. Judges are not around. I had to have a Tarrant County judge. It was the other thing that was so strange. And when I asked the hospital for time, I said, this is a holiday weekend. And the lawyer said, well, what holiday? I said, well, it was Veterans Day. She didn't like the way I said it. She said, well, don't lecture me about that. I had to put my dog down yesterday. And I was shocked. And I said, well, now maybe you can understand how this mother feels, only it's not her dog, it's her child.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they didn't like me saying that either. Anyway, so I was talking to the mother and telling the mother all the things that I had to do in letting her know that this was going to be a mad dash to the finish line. Who got there first? State Representative Tan Parker was in the room with the mother, and she handed the phone to Tan, and Tan said, hey, Joe, what can I do to help? And I said, well, first thing you can do is find me a judge. I need a judge. He goes, well, I only know one, and he's a family law judge. I said, well, it doesn't matter. Is he a district court judge? He said, yes. So all district court judges are judges of general jurisdiction,
right?
Which is what I need. So he contacts the judge, and the judge says, well, you know, I'll consider this, you know, only I have a problem. I'm not in Fort Worth. I'm in Houston. He was at church with his parents. He had come down for the weekend. I said, that's unbelievable. So I texted the judge and said, I've got to put together the paperwork. Where will you be in a couple of hours? He said, well, we're going to go to Fun Kitchen in Houston and have lunch. Generally, there's a long wait. So, you know, I went to the office, and with some help from some other lawyers, we put together the paperwork, and I drove to Fun Kitchen and met the judge just as he was walking out of the restaurant. And he sat on a bench outside Fun Kitchen, read the petition, then he went to his car, got a cigarette, smoked it, and sat back down after considering everything, said, I'm going to sign your restraining order. So he signed the restraining order right there on the bench outside Fun Kitchen.
And it's so unbelievable. It's like a miracle that like you would have a Tarrant County judge in Harris County willing to hear this case on, you know, with the sand timer running down to minutes or hours before this child is murdered, and you know that it's all in place for you to get this restraining order. So judge grants the restraining order there in Harris County. That has now kicked off a whole series of hearings and legal maneuvers. Tell us about that. What's going on with that? My understanding, the Attorney General has got involved. I think Governor Abbott has at least made a statement about it. What's going on from a legal proceedings moving forward?
Well, as a lawyer, you know that a temporary restraining order is just that, only temporary, that the court has to consider the case more on the merits, not finally on the merits, but more on the merits, the temporary injunction hearing, and it has to be set within 14 days. Well, the first thing that Cooks did was move to recuse Judge Kim, who signed the restraining order. They thought it was some kind of setup. It was so odd because had they just given me a couple extra days, I'd have driven to Fort Worth and filed. I wouldn't have found Judge Kim.
You wouldn't have needed to find a judge at, you know, Fun Kitchen in Houston on a Sunday afternoon if they would have been reasonable.
That's exactly right. And so it just would have gone through. But they thought that something was up. You know, it turns out nothing was up. But anyway, Judge Kim gets recused. The administrative judge recuses himself. The judge who heard the recusal turns out that his niece was an employee of a hospital, so he recuses himself. So we ended up with a judge appointed by the Supreme Court of Texas to come and hear the injunction. So we had a full day hearing on the injunction, full evidentiary day, full of legal arguments, and arguing that the statute itself was unconstitutional because it deprives both Tinsley and the mother of a substantive due process and procedural due process rights.
Yeah, because and that's essential. I mean, I don't want to dwell on this for, and I'm a lawyer, you're a lawyer, we love talking about this stuff, but, you know, when this ethics panel convenes, the family has no real ability to intervene. In, they can attend, but they can't talk, they can't influence it.
That's right. They can't. You're not allowed to have a lawyer. There's no evidentiary hearing. It's just the committee deciding amongst themselves. In this case, you know, the statute doesn't have any requirement as to who's on the committee. It has no requirement as to what medical standard that the committee has to make a decision by. It has no statutory requirement that the evidence be by compelling or clear.
And you've argued in other cases that this is unconstitutional. So this was argued to the judge for a what would be called a temporary injunction, but that would last for, you know, months and months throughout the term of the case. And that's right. What happened with that?
Well, the judge took it under advisement, and to her credit, so we had the hearing shortly before, like on the 20th of December, and she said she was not going to make a ruling until January 2nd and ordered Cooks to maintain life-sustaining care until she ruled.
So she extended the restraining order, in essence, and then held over right. How long to rule on the actual injunction.
Right. And then she, to the court's credit, said, and to Cook's credit, they both said, look, we'll give you 7 days after the 2nd if the ruling turns out against us. Well, sure enough, she ruled against us, denied the temporary injunction, and said the Cooks had to maintain life-sustaining care through the 9th. And it gave us time to perfect an appeal. So literally within 2 hours of the trial court making its decision, we filed a notice of appeal, and then a couple hours later, an emergency motion with the Court of Appeals to stay the application of the order, meaning that Cook should maintain life-sustaining care during the pendency of the appeal. And then the next day, we filed the transcript and the record and the docket sheet and did everything we needed to do to conclude perfecting the appeal. And on Friday afternoon of the 3rd, the Court of Appeals granted the emergency motion.
Yeah, so where we're at today is that the Court of Appeals has ordered the hospital to continue to give care to this child who they wanted to kill basically 2 months ago, that there's not an imminent threat, but there is all of this appellate litigation going on. I understand that Attorney General Paxton has kind of weighed in and said, you know, and this is unusual, saying the law is unconstitutional.
Well, there's an interesting statutory requirement. Anytime any person in a lawsuit challenges the constitutionality of a Texas statute, they must give notice to the Attorney General. So, of course, we gave notice when we filed our lawsuit to the Attorney General, and I sent a copy of the original petition off. The Attorney General then sent in a letter November 21st saying to the judge, we do not believe this statute is constitutional. So the Attorney General's obligation is to defend the constitutionality of Texas statutes, unless the Attorney General believes they're not to be enforced because they're unconstitutional.
Because their higher duty is to defend the Constitution, of course.
Right. Their higher duty is to defend the Constitution. In this case, yeah, that's exactly right.
So, okay. Case, so that's where we're at. And I'll tell you, we're running out of time. So we're going to keep an eye on this case. So there's going to be more developments, probably going to go, I would assume, right, Joe, this is going to, if the Court of Appeals doesn't step in, this then would go to the Texas Supreme Court.
Right. Yeah. So our brief is due on the 16th of January. The hospital's brief is due on the 27th. I suspect that the court will have oral argument relatively quickly and make a decision relatively quickly. And someone may then choose to proceed and go to the Texas Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Tell folks who are listening, if they're facing something similar in a hospital with a loved one who's, you know, the hospital is wanting to remove care, this is something Texas Right to Life does. How would they connect up with Texas Right to Life and get connected with an attorney, either with you or an attorney like you, who could help them?
Well, Texas Right to Life is very active, and so they can look up Texas Right to Life online. Texas Right to Life has ensured that when the hospital gives the paperwork regarding the 10-day notice to the family, that their phone number is in that paperwork. So if you're facing a 10-day rule, look in your paperwork and you'll see Texas Right to Life. Then call them, and then they will find someone like me to come to your aid.
Great.
And
great.
If it's at all possible.
Great.
Even on a football Saturday.
Thank you for your work on this. Godspeed on this. It is really an important job that you're doing. Thank you for your work on it, Joe, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tony, for having me on.
Hi, this is Kerry Cheshire, Vice President of Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. The 2020 election will be here before we know it, and with every election comes candidates that need to be vetted and tested before we can entrust them with our vote. At TFR, we take that vetting process seriously. Any candidate seeking our endorsement must first fill out a comprehensive questionnaire, then sit for an interview with our staff. We then seek input from each candidate's would-be constituents before making a decision. To find out more about our endorsement process and view which candidates have made the cut, visit EmpowerTexans.com/endorsements.
In this week's commentary, Empower Texans CEO Michael Quinn Sullivan encourages us to expect the unexpected.
One doesn't usually get excited about an empty field. Now, the idea of what might go there, a crop if you're a farmer, a new residential development if you're a contractor, or maybe an office park. But an empty field? Not a chance. We just drive by without a second glance. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan. Yet, just outside Bethlehem is a field long recognized as the place where 2,000 years ago, shepherds were watching their flock at night and, well, let me just quote Luke 2 for you. And lo, the angel of the Lord came upon them, and the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid. And the angel said unto them, Fear not, for behold, I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord. And this shall be a sign unto you. Ye shall find the babe wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. And suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. While Texans like to celebrate our farmers and rural heritage, shepherds weren't the toast of ancient Israel society. Often dirty, coarse men, they definitely weren't the polite company of the well-heeled pals of the Roman puppet King Herod. Those shepherds didn't start their evening watch expecting to be the recipients of such a message any more than their contemporaries, or any of us, would have expected them to. Scripture doesn't record the reaction of the people of Bethlehem when the shepherds came dashing into town. I suspect it was somewhat incredulous. The shepherds weren't expecting to see an angelic host of God any more than the sleepy residents of Bethlehem were expecting the shepherds to see an angelic host of God. None were expecting to see the Messiah. But that's how God works. Glad tidings of peace don't come when we expect it, but when and how God knows we need it. Wherever we are, let's be hopefully listening. With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio commentary, I'm Michael Quinn Sullivan.
If you haven't already, go and subscribe to the Texas Scorecard Radio podcast, available on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, basically all your podcasting platforms. Other than that, thanks for listening, and come back next week.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.